Welcome to By the Sword, where we discuss the modern study of historical European martial arts, or HEMA, with instructors, experts, and martial artists from all over the world. In this episode of the podcast, I speak to Fran, Charles, and Spencer of the Knights of Wakanda Armoured Combat Team USA. I learned about how the group formed, the challenges of the sport, and the passion for community and excellence in the team. The episode was recorded on Instagram Live, 26 June 2022. Unfortunately, due to technical issues, the first 20 minutes of the recording were lost. I apologise for any inconvenience. Where were we? The origins of the Knights of Wakanda, armored combat group, spread out throughout North America, various different states, New York, Vegas. Where are you guys?
Midwest,
all over the place. Around 17 of you, all BIPOC folks. You've got a really good sort of community, all because of Fran's had an idea after seeing a group photo that we have to do this as a regular thing. It can't just be a one-off. And that's how the group came about.
Absolutely.
So you have witnessed an increase in people of color joining the armored combat community, taking up the art, taking up the sport. And yeah, I was just sort of getting into the nitty gritty really about how the reffing works, because I've never sort of taken part or witnessed an armored combat fight. And I was asking, I think I was speaking to Fran, like, what do the referees and the marshals actually do? What's their job? Because you see these like massive combats, like huge numbers of people like wailing on each other with pole axes and stuff. It's like, how do you referee that? Like, what do you do? Excuse me, can you stop doing this?
No, there's no like. So you know, being on both sides, I know that when you have the helmet on, it's really hard to hear. So if you're trying to get someone's attention, you have to be as loud as possible. And so essentially, you know, the referees, we have sticks, these yellow flags, and then, you know, we try to wear like yellow or something that's kind of attention grabbing, so that we can get people to now stop fighting. But yeah, no soft inside voices for this at all.
No. And is it like in HEMA, the referees and the staff are made up of other fighters?
Sometimes.
Yeah. I feel like there's a mix. There's a mix.
Yeah.
You're right. Back with the marshals thing instead. But yeah, there's a mix because people, if you're marshal, you have to know the rules. And then honestly, I feel for fighter, everyone should marshal at least once to help, because the community, because we can't fight. We can fight without the marshals, but not for sanctioned events, right? Like you can do practices, but in order to be safe, you have to have people making sure we don't run out of the list, or when someone loses a helmet. Oh my God, during a Dragon Con last year at Trebian, had his helmet fall off once, and the person was about to swing once, and they're like, stop fight. Look at that, it stopped in time, but it was still really scary because stuff like that can't happen.
Oh my God.
There's a video from a EuroLeague of a ref, because a guy had a helmet come off and a dude was swinging an axe, and a ref like put his bare hand and like moved the axe out of the way, and the ref was fine, but it was just like, they're really the unsung heroes of this sport, because like, I wouldn't do it. I refuse to not be in armor in a list with a bunch of other armored people swinging stuff. It's just not something I'm gonna do. Like, they're the people who really make the sport what it is, in my opinion.
So I don't know about armored combat, but is there a lot of money in it? Is it like well sponsored? Is everything, or is everyone a volunteer? Is it like
You go first, Fran. Go for it.
Yeah. I'm not trying to take over the interview. I would say I would honestly argue that it is country dependent.
Right.
Because when I fought in Mexico, so basically for the individual fighters, you're pretty much paying on your own, and then there's like some like places in Europe where the countries are subsidizing the fighters, and then certain leagues where they can get money. In the U.S., not really, but I think in other countries there's like people do a little bit better.
There's probably a market for it.
For the most part here, not in the U.S.
I say right now, no. But that's the things we're working on. That's like some of the stuff, like trying to be Sword Avatar to get people's attention. So you can be like, this is what people are doing. Like, let's sponsor us so we can sponsor your stuff. There's definitely money in it. I mean, people will watch men and women bare knuckle beat each other, do stuff. Why wouldn't they watch people with swords and like axes? This is like the Knights of Wakanda bardiche they have. I need to put it on.
Oh, where's my
thing? Yeah, now, this is like, this is one of the bigger weapons, but. Imagine this, hitting people with that. Granted, the armor keeps you safe, great. But there's still some crazy stuff that happens. Why wouldn't people want to see that? So that's one of the things I want to do for our community, not for myself, but for us. So people, men and women, boys and girls, theys and thems in the future can be like, hey, I just want to get in shape, and here's some armor, and then they don't have to spend like $2,000, $3,000 on kits and weapons and travel. Exactly.
That's my next question, actually, was going to be, is it expensive?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I mean, it can be, right? Like, so me, I bought my kit, like, I wanted to be a duelist. I knew what I wanted to do, so I have a titanium kit that fits me perfectly, and it's like a second skin. But it's still, that costs like $2,500. There are places like National Armor Combat, a lot of the stuff in ACS communities, probably still ACW, I just don't know a lot about ACW, where people have loaner gear, and of course they get you into the soft kits first, like regular HEMA and everything. That's why when people down on other fighting styles, I'm like, Foam's still fun to fight in. That's what you learn. I mean, and that's going to be it's a fun game.
I started in Foam.
Exactly, same. I mean, Foam, SCA, LARPs, it's all a starting point. It's not graduating. It's just a different style. It can cost that.
Charles, you mentioned the foam fighting. I know a lot of you folks do the foam fighting so that you can train without having to put all the gear on. Do you find there's a lot of crossover, or there's a lot of sort of overlap or interest between the foam fighting community, armor combat, and the LARP community? Because that's what you have in common.
Are you talking about the community overlap or the skill
do you
overlap?
Get people
or
coming from one community into the other kind of thing, or do people tend to do multiple versions?
So a lot of my teammates and quite a few of the people I know that I knew before Steel that are in Steel now, I knew in LARP before in like the foam fighting circles and such. So, and even the ones who started out before that are really excelling that I've seen, like, for example, Spencer, they're kicking ass, like, all the way through because they already have a base and they kind of already know what they're doing as far as it's stick tag, you know, whether it's, you know, metal, whether it's foam, whether it's wood, it's all stick tag,
stick
you know,
tag
in a certain aspect.
So did you start out doing foam fighting before you got onto the Steel?
So actually what happened was I was 15 years old and I saw the movie Role Models and I was like, Role Models is a LARP movie where it's pretty fun. I think it might be in the vein of like Superbad, one of those like kind of goofy.
Oh, I think I know the one. It's a comedy, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's probably like Peter Dinklage and other people. It's
good. Peter Dinklage. Yeah. So that's what I saw first. And then I think like a year later, I was on a LARP field, you know, throwing spell packets at my friends and hitting each other with foam, and then it just kind of ramped up to the Steel fighting I do now.
Do you still do LARPing, or has that been
I'm kind of inactive in all of it at the point. I'm still training, I'm still doing stuff, I'm still writing, but life has been kind of happening a lot, so I've been getting life together. I miss it all, though.
So, oh God, I've got so many questions. Like, I've got more questions than I've got written down here. What do you think?
We're here. So, I'm here. We're here.
what would you say? I mean, this is kind of going back to my first question, really. Fran, what would you say the philosophy behind the group is, the Knights of Wakanda?
Okay.
And who came up with the name?
I honestly don't remember how the name came. There were like people commenting. I did not come up with a name. Like, I know for sure that. So someone said something, and then I think it was called something, and then it ended up being up there. So the name is lost to history. but I would say, in terms of like what our philosophy is that ultimately it is a place to like increase the visibility of the sport. But also to increase our skill set. So I think that it's one thing to be visible, but I think it's another thing to be visible and doing well. So, you know, one of the forefathers of, you know, Black fighting in the sport, he did really good against, you know, the Russians. And this isn't like me saying political stuff, but it's because, you know, the Ukrainians and the Russians are like historically the top teams in the sport. Like they do amazing. And so when he fought many, many years ago, he did really well. And so for us, you know, we want to be visible and representing the sport, but we want to be saying, you know, we're not just here to look pretty. We're here to like to win gold, to win medals. And there are a lot of people, you know, within our team that have placed very high up. You know, Spencer's like his own like U.S. champion, like, like very humble. But, you know, so it's to, you know, create a community, but also to create like good athletes as well.
So it's representation, but also excellence.
Yes,
exactly.
It's not just here we are kind of thing. It's like we're here and we're here to do well kind of thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Ambition.
And also promote the history of the sport too. Like when she's talking about Adrian Russell, mm-hmm. who's the BA and SCA. He played SCA as well, another mm-hmm. LARP historical reenactment group. And he came over to Seattle, and they called him just like, I forget the wall, like the black wall or everything. Because it was like a 3-on-1. He just wouldn't go down, even though there's probably no chance of him, of the USA team winning. He just stood there, and he gained their respect. And he's just been a really great role model, slash also letting us know that we can do this.
What's the guy's name? Adrian?
Adrian Russell. Or Adrian Russell. Adrian Russell. I think he has dim witties in the middle, but Adrian Russell, if you look at that. The sport's been around more, even longer, but in the United States, really, been 2012 is when it first started. So now we're 10 years old.
You're a graduate.
Minus the 2 years. Minus the 2 years from COVID, which slowed down a lot of things, but we're just taking that momentum and going with it, just trying to show things mainstream.
Cool. So, Charles, you got into it through LARP. Fran, how did you get into it?
I was very unfamiliar with the sport. I was literally, so I have an office job and I was just sitting at my desk so long, getting very unhealthy. And so I was just looking for a place to work out. And I just happened to stumble upon the Sword School in New York. And then I had this really intense workout and I was like, I thought I was going to puke. I did not puke. And then at the end, Morgan came up to me. He was like, you know, most people normally puke. Good job, you didn't. And then he handed me a sword. And from there, I was like, okay, this is my reward. And I just kept coming back. But I do have like a little fighting background. I've done other martial arts and I did fencing in college. But I kept getting in trouble for being too aggressive. So this ended up being my outlet.
Oh, you found your people.
Yes.
And Spencer, I mean, I've asked you this before, but tell us how you got into armored combat.
Mine was, I was in the SCA from 2009, and I've done martial arts since I was like 8. But after doing more sword stuff, and then in 2012, that's when a lot of the forefathers or the people that started in the United States started doing stuff. And I was a poor college kid, still a poor college kid. and I was like, I'll train with you guys, but I didn't have money to go overseas and fight with them. So I just trained with them. And then they had a tournament come to Springfield, Illinois, which is where I live now, called the International Tournament of the Shiv. And that's when we had like the Ukrainians come, the Belarus, like all the big teams. Like I think Russian 3 came. So like their third squad came. And one of the big starters, Brad Scheide, is like, you want to use my armor, which is like a $10,000 kit. I mean, you don't have to have a $10,000 kit to fight, but it was a tank. And he's like, I'm like, yes, please, let me borrow it. And I got to fight the team, did pretty well. And I was just hooked. I just love that style of fighting, like, except that whole trying to pay homage to your title of Sword Avatar. I just want to do it, historically speaking.
Yeah. Do it all. It's amazing. I don't know how you find the time. It's a miracle, really. Is this like your full-time job now, being the sword?
Trying to make it, but I just do odds and ends on the...
Someday.
Like, when I raise money. Like, going to San Diego this next weekend to help my friend sell their house. But then, while I'm doing that, I'm also going to go to a sword school and train, too. So, just making it work.
Making it work. Making the time.
Yeah.
So... you mentioned Russia and Belarus and the Ukrainian teams coming to you. What's the furthest the team has traveled to compete?
I think that would be DragonCon in Atlanta. And actually, I had planned on being there, but once again, the whole COVID thing, I was quaking in my boots for all of that. So I was not leaving anywhere. But I watched and I was going crazy on the during the fights. Fran was actually there for it though.
Yeah. So that's Dragon Con. Tell us about Dragon Con. What kind of an event is that?
Go ahead, Fran.
Yeah, I was gonna say the fighting there was actually my first time ever going to Dragon Con. And so apparently it was the smallest it's ever been. I think it's the largest convention in the U.S. Second largest? Okay, second largest. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's just basically where you go to nerd out because they have a lot of different fandoms. It's not just, there's comics, there's art, there's sci-fi, there's everything. And then we have a spot. So it's just like a broader, like a medieval fighting tournament that's put on by Larry. And the nice little content that I fight as well. But it was an amazing event. The audience was just really lively and it was a great time.
I fought in DragonCon the year before the Knights of Wakanda, but I fought with my home team and we did really well, and fighting in front of the crowd was wild.
Fran, if you can imagine going to a hotel, and the DragonCon spans 5 different hotels, so it's like you have to walk from one hotel to another. We were in a place called the Sheraton, and we had a ballroom, and they had like a big wooden list lined up. There were chairs, and it was packed, even like after COVID times. It was like the first year after, and there was maybe anywhere from 500 to 1,000 people in that room. And like even a single fight, I'll just show you a video sometime.
Yeah.
Fighting it, and after you get done, you could turn around, look to the crowd, and they're like,
and they're all
it was like a WWE thing. Yeah. But DragonCon is the second biggest convention in the United States. The biggest one is San Diego Comic Con in their part, but it's ginormous. And people were like, I've never heard of this before. I want to know more about this. And that's when we're like, we want people to know this year. Hopefully it's even bigger and better. I know you're going to talk about later, but accolades. DragonCon was actually the first time Fran came. Charles couldn't make it this time, but we had Travian, myself, Cyrus, and 2 other white wolves, we said. And some of the people, because we couldn't have all our whole people color group, they just joined us. Awesome. And, and Celeste as well. And forgive me if I'm forgetting anybody, but I think that was mostly the team. Because I think we only had 6.
I think that was the squad. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 6. You have teams of 5, and it's 5-on-5. And we actually won that competition. And there were some good teams there. And they were just like, have fun, go out there, Knights of Wakanda. I know you guys don't get to practice a lot, but have fun. And we won the whole tournament and beat some pretty good teams.
Dubs so really up, cool. baby.
Yeah,
let's go.
We're
like,
we're going. We need to win as well.
Let's go. Yeah.
This is fun. I mean, Cyrus is a great captain. I was being the co-captain. I just like watch people. There's a big guy that would show up. I'm like, Cyrus, I know this is a plan, but I got that guy. He just take care of everybody else, and it would work. Mm-hmm. It was fun. So next year, hopefully we can defend it, or at least we'll fight it. We'll do our best. It doesn't matter.
Let's do it. I'm gonna be there for this for that one.
When you're training, I mean, it's a martial art, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in most martial arts, you're training 1-on-1. It's the duel, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But in armored combat and in bow hunt and stuff, it's a team. So it's kind of like a team sport, but it's combat.
Mm-hmm.
When I was learning BJJ, like, we had to learn set pieces, so it would be like the setup, you know, and all this kind of stuff. When you're training as a team, do you have to like learn tactics like that? Do you have to like this is this formation, or this is the way we set it up for this, or does it, you know, I'd imagine otherwise it's just gonna be complete chaos, right?
So you, with your team beforehand, you normally decide overall, what's, you know, what's your job, what's your job, what's your job, just as a baseline, so that whenever the chaos is happening, someone who's newer can at least be like, okay, what am I supposed to be doing right now, to kind of focus them. And as it gets broader and broader, you can apply more jobs. Like, both Fran and I actually have the same position. Like, we're both exploiters, and we both use big sticks and we hit people. So that involves, like, staying out of the grapple. That involves staying mobile. That involves always being a threat. So certain things have certain jobs. And then you also have your solo skill set that you have to build up as well, so that you're not a liability.
Yeah, not like a glory seeker type of thing who's going to let everybody down.
Exactly,
Does that happen, by the way? Do people just try and one man it to victory and...
Oh, yeah.
Mess it up?
And they get hurt. They get hurt a lot of times. Like, not injured, but, like, it doesn't work well for them. Yeah, yeah. Like...
Not
you got to think about tactics. Like, we had a 5-on-5. A lot of times there's always going to be a big star on the team, or... you just know them, so you're like, okay, they're going to want to do this. Don't let them do this. Or we start out on the corners. Sometimes you push the corners out, do like kind of a horn of the bull, like Shaka Zulu thing, where you try to squish people in. It really just depends on the fight. It depends on how big the list is. Because in Dragon Con, we had a smaller list. It was a way smaller list, which isn't, I prefer it that way, because when it gets to the bigger list, you're fighting, you only have, you know, it's not even really a 180. It's more like 75, maybe even smaller, depending on your helmet. So you're seeing this, and you have to turn around. Yeah, your vision wise. So once they get behind you, you're in trouble, because it's 360 engagement. However, you can't hit the back of the knees, the parts that aren't targeted. And if they do, you get red carded, and that's just, we're not there to hurt people, right? Yeah. Everyone's got to go home, especially when there's not a lot of money in it yet. It's like, why would you do that?
Yeah.
But you just got to know your tactics, and you got to be part of the team. So the day before at Dragon Con, last one, Cyrus got us together, and we had everybody, we're like, all right, this is going to be our lineup. Let's see. Like, Celeste was on my left, and I knew after, I'd never met Celeste before, but after looking at her and figuring out, we were like seeing how each other moved, I'm like, I don't have to worry about that. As long as she's on my side, this right there, it'll be perfectly fine. So you just got to know your people and have fun.
Oh, it's really fascinating. I've got so many questions, but I'm going to have to put my questions on pause for a minute, because I'm going to say to the folks at home, there's 11 of you watching now. We are, oh my gosh, we're 46 minutes in. We did lose the first 20 minutes because of technical issues, but unfortunately. So folks at home, if you want to ask the Knights of Wakanda a question, please do. You can either type it, I'd rather you typed it into the button at the bottom of your screen. It looks like a speech bubble with a question mark in it. Tap that button and you can ask us your questions. We'll read them out. I'm just gonna see if there's anything in the comments, because sometimes people say stuff and I miss it.
While she's looking at the comments, we want to do a shameless plug. Cyrus made these t-shirts. Like, we got one that he wants to do a comic book, and we're getting it for everybody else. It's like my character, Seto Gushuka with swords and stuff. We got one for Fran, we got one for Charles. Check us out, Knights of Wakanda link. We'll give it to Fran later, so you can put it in there. They also made a soundtrack that just came out called, if you just look up Knights of Wakanda, actually on Instagram or on Spotify as well, it's Spotify. Actually the tracks are up there where you can, like, you make a video of the tracks Knights of Wakanda and you can pick some.
Awesome.
They spent a lot of good time.
So you got music, you got comics.
Oh,
here we go. Here's a question from Dennis. Question from Dennis the Decadent. How heavy is the armor on average? Spencer, you're the one with the fancy armor.
So my fancy armor, even when I put it in the tote and everything, when I'm flying, it is 50 pounds. Still with titanium, 50 pounds in my one bag, and the other bag's about 47 pounds. So the helmet's around anywhere from 15 to maybe 20 pounds. My armor actually on is probably still, like I said, 50-something pounds. So around 70 and up. Some people have kids when they're stainless steel, which adds a whole lot more. What would you say, Charles and Fran? Like, anywhere up to, like, 120 pounds? Maybe even more?
If someone's wearing 100 pounds of armor, though, like, they're doing themselves a disservice. But, like, yeah, 60, 70, yeah, right in that area.
Fran, what was it like the first time you put armor on? How did it feel?
So I can say the cool story or the honest story. The first time I was terrified. And I was thinking that, like, oh, why did I sign up for this? And I talked to, like, one of my closest friends, and she was like, you've been training, you'll be okay. And then after, like, you know, our initiation process, so that was terrible, but like different teams have, like, New York has an initiation process to, like, you know, get you ready for the armor. And then, but after the first fight, it was actually fun. And so I just remember, I don't even remember, like, I spent most of the time on the ground because I was getting pushed over, which is how it works when you first start. And I just remember at some point I was just laughing because I was just having so much fun. And so at a certain point, like, wearing the armor just kind of feels like a hug, which is really, it's so hard to describe, but it almost feels like, you know, you're putting on your second skin and it's comfortable. Well, it's not comfortable. You feel comfortable with it.
You can learn to like it.
Yes.
It's was it like, I imagine, like, this is just me imagining, tell me if I'm wrong, like, when you said you spent a lot of your time on the ground, like, putting armor on for the first time and just learning to move around in it must be difficult, right? Yes. Let alone, you know, actually fighting and moving your limbs and trying to be coordinated. Is it kind of like being a baby again and learning how to walk?
Yeah, pretty much. It's weird because, you know, you have 70 extra pounds of things on you and you don't have your full range of motion. You don't have your full range of visibility. So it's like in a dark, I'm trying to say it in a way that doesn't discourage people from joining, but it's like learning to walk all over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, that's part of your growth as a fighter, kind of, is like getting better kit and learning to move with it. Because a lot of people's first kit, it's like ill-fitting, it's too heavy, it wasn't made for you, so it's got that little bit of play in it. Like, that's definitely part of your growth as a fighter, is
getting into a kit. And that's one of the coolest parts, too, is when, as you talk about how we're trying to grow, we try to make it historical, because we want to add some things to actually people have, credibility to it. That's why historic medieval battles, they try to have everything historically accurate, even though sometimes I still wear my chucks with it because they look cool. I like them instead of my turn shoes. But if you can imagine, like, some person that's ill-fitted, like a peasant or just somebody that, like, hey, you're being attacked, here's just any armor, it's better than nothing. So imagine just putting on stuff that's not meant for you. And that's the part that starts with the first people when they first start doing loner gear. Like I said, first of all, don't buy anything. Just find a place that's closest to you. They teach you how to fight. You do a soft kit. And then eventually you can work on getting your own armor and kit, or you just be given stuff, and some of that stuff just doesn't fit, and you're like, well, it's not going to hurt me, which is good, because you don't want it to not fit you to where you get hurt, but if it's not made for you, it's different.
Oh, there's an interesting comment here from Evan W. Prather. Not to interrupt, never seen you live. I don't know who he's talking to, if it's me or you guys. You should play Mordhau or Chivalry 2. Fun games. Someone of your talent with weapons would probably have fun playing it. I'm sure these folks are
I play both of those.
I love them. Both of those.
I was top 4% in the world on For Honor as a warden, dog. Not to, like, not to brag, but I did. I did a lot of sword games.
It's true.
There you go. Like, as if we aren't enormous nerds already.
Which, honestly, those games like that, some of the ones, they actually do help you learn how to fight. I don't mean necessarily moves, and they do a flashy spin, which is still cool. Not efficient, but it's cool. But the spatial awareness and knowing where people are and you're fighting, that actually, like, especially Chivalry and Mordhau, it's really, really cool. Yeah, just sad when you get shot by an arrow that you don't see anywhere. That's sad.
Yeah, he says, if you ever see Thermacules, hit me up. There you go. You got someone to play. Okay. I want to go
there
again.
We go.
There's a question in the question box. All right, it was just Dennis the Decadent. Right, he wanted to know, he was the one who, the chap who asked about the armor, how heavy it is. Like, you would know the answer to this, Spencer, is how does the armor, combat armor, compare to, say, the SCA armor? Is it heavier, lighter? So,
it's heavier, light, but it depends, because that's one weird thing with, not weird in a bad way, weird thing with SCA. Some people like wearing historically accurate armor. Some people wear their steel kits for doing SCA. However, a sport SCA kit, all you have to cover is obviously your head, your joints. Mm-hmm. You still want the gauntlets. You have to have a kidney, something protecting your kidneys, and then your knees. And you'd want something in your spine. But really, there's some people that wear, like, nothing on their chest. Which is more of a gladiator type thing, or they just have things covered, and that's still safe. But obviously, in steel, you have to have everything covered. Like, if I just wore my gambas and the most armor I took off, one time I took off this part of my armor to where I had like a gap a little bit in duels, which would still suck if it gets hit there. But doing long sword, doing anyone's, as long as it's not the perfect shot, I'll be fine. And it could cut my gambas in, but more than that, I'll be safe. And keep in mind for all the viewers out here, these are not sharp swords. They make sure they don't have burrs. They make sure they're not any edge to them. But metal, when you swing it right, I was fighting Brett Skinner, who's an amazing one-on-one pro fighter guy. And I hit him just at range, and I actually cut off. He had a sash because we like had red side and blue side. And I, he was red side. I cut his sash off with my non-Sark sword. Oh, so, yeah, they actually gave it to me. I don't know where to put it. I have it somewhere. There's my little trophy. Even though I got my butt kicked, they're like, here you go. I was like, oh.
That's an accolade.
Yeah.
So, while we're waiting for people to come in with the questions, oh, God, I've got so many questions. So, something, an observation that I've made is, like, there's a little bit of... There has been in the past, like, kind of a bit of snobbery towards armored combat from other sword adjacent communities, right? Like, in HEMA, we get this with sports fencing can look down on us because they think that we're brutes. And we can kind of look down on the armored combat because it's just bashing each other. There's no skill. Armor,
yeah.
And all this kind of stuff. But an observation that I've made is, like, watching people who, like, people who do HEMA watching armored combat think, oh, that looks really dangerous, you know, that looks so dangerous, even like, you know, because, you know, you're trying to knock people in the head, smash people in the head and stuff. But what I've noticed is seeing people come from armored combat into HEMA is that they're very safety conscious because they're like, I've got no armor on, this is dangerous. Do you know what I mean? It's like there is an awareness that I think HEMA people lack about what is actually dangerous in terms of what can hit you and what can hurt you. Like, if you're literally armored from head to toe, you have a lot less to worry about. If there's gaps, if you've got like soft armor on and things like that. So my experience has been that people who do armor combat are actually a lot more safety aware than the average HEMA person who's just like swinging for the fences. Because like we only wear like little sports fencing masks. They're not made for big impacts. They're not helmets. They, you know, we really need to do better. Dennis says, I have great respect. I fought SCA for 30 years. Wow.
He does all the crossbow stuff now. He like actually, if you ever look at his channel, Dennis the Decadent, he shoots his crossbow every single day, and I think he's like on day 800 something or in the 700s. Oh, so that's so dedication, cool. Sort of thing.
That is dedication.
But
yeah, but you're right though. People hit too. I mean, honestly, that's what I have a lot of SCA friends. They like say like steel looks too dangerous for me. And I'm like, honestly, if you're armored correctly, it's actually you don't feel anything. Yeah. I've had some of my worst injuries from fighting SCA where we fight with rattan, right? And it can be this thick, I don't know where, sword somewhere. But yeah, you fight with rattan, but that's the mass behind some of those weapons. Like, you definitely have to dial it back because when I get hit with a pole arm and that one, I'm like, whoa! Or even pole arm with that metal one can suck if it hits like in joints, but if it hits my helmet, right, I'll be like, whoa! But it's not, it's just different. There still can be hurt. Or as you know with HEMA, some people hit too hard in HEMA. And they're like, oh, don't hit too hard, or I don't hit that hard. But mechanics work, and you only have a fencing mask on there. It can spark.
Serious question, right, folks? I'll start with you, Fran. What's the worst injury you've ever had doing armored combat?
Oh, man. Okay, so funnily enough, my worst, like, injuries from armored combat aren't actually from the fighting. It happened in practice. So I've torn two joints doing like out of armor, so like I have my my ACL and my MCL torn.
Those are real sports injuries. Like, this is the real sport.
Like, those are career ending injuries.
It's a career ending injury if you don't know how, if you're ready to give it up, and I'm not, so I'm still here.
There you go.
Only if you're ready to get up. I like that. And Spencer, what's the worst thing you've been subjected to?
I'm trying to think. I don't know. Like, I think more right now I'm dealing with shoulder stuff, but I think that's been years of bad posture. And then also just not working up my lats as much as I should. Like, my traps are good.
Cuff?
Yeah, it's like right over the rotator. And I went to the doctor, and they're just like, "Oh, you're just getting old." I'm like, "Well, that's super helpful." And I've gone to a lot of my other sports doctor friends, and they're like, "You need to keep your posture up this way. You need to do some other sleeper stretches because it hurts. Like when I throw a right hook, or it's like, oh, that hurts. That doesn't feel great, but it's not like it's torn and it's not there." But really, just working with that injury, doing the longsword fight when we were in Dallas, Texas, which I still managed to pull out a W. But one of the refs like, "You need to work on your extension a lot more." And the part one, I'm fighting my armor because even though it's made for me, my gammas is just a little bit too tight because when I stretch out, it hugs. So it's hard to, we talk about that being a baby again, where when you don't have anything on, you're like, "Oh, I move so freely." When you have your gammas on and then you have your armor on top of that, it's hard to do this or you get tired. And I didn't want to be like, I'm slightly injured and I'm just not fighting through the injury, but you know, I'm just not 100%. So
that's why. Giving it your all. And Charles, what's the worst thing that's happened to you?
I've got a list. So as you can see my profile picture, I have the busted face, which is like, I had a helmet that didn't fit strapped on correctly. And I got hit in the head and I got an impact cut right on my my eyebrow line. And it busted my face. Then I had another thing happen, basically on the other side, where I was caught up, and I got caught, and my helmet was pressed against my face, and the dude axed me in it, and it did the same thing on the other side. And I've had, like, a concussion, which was from an ill-fitting helmet as well. So, like, take your pick out of those three, I guess. And
so, yeah. we've got self-inflicted, wear and tear, and superficial injury to the eyebrows, like from a poorly fit mask, and a concussion from the same thing. Like, this isn't that different to stuff that people in HEMA sustain, I'd say.
Most of the injuries you get in this sport are like leg, ankle, knee, like joint injuries, joints, from people falling on each other and not knowing how to fall.
Nasty falls. So, like, when people collapse, like when you're trying to like smash someone to the ground, are they falling down because they're exhausted, they've lost their balance, or are they actually knocked TF out?
Yes.
All three.
I'll say getting knocked out is really, really rare in the sport. It can happen. Right. Most of the time it's through like ill-fitted helmet, because if your helmet fits you well and you're padded correctly, it doesn't move, your brain pan is fine, and you'll feel, you're like, whoa, but you're all right.
Unless you get hit by like the top 2% hard hitters in the sport in the head, you're pretty much fine, like for headshots.
Yeah, that's true too. Like, although I do have to say, when I was fighting at ITOC and we were fighting Russia Team 3, I was hit with such a nice straight cross with a shield, because they shield hit, and it hit me in the face. And I just went, my whole body felt it. Like, I don't know if you watched Doctor Strange, where the one part where they hit him, he has the outer body experience. Funny. Yeah, you know, that, I got hit by that, and I was like, ugh, I didn't like it. Like, it wasn't painful, it was effective. Yeah. And after that point, I wanted to, like, just fall over and go hide in a corner, because I'm like, no, I've never been hit like that before.
That was like, this is what terrifies me personally about armored combat. It's like, are those people actually being knocked out? But if they're, like, falling over because, you know, they're tripped, or they're exhausted, or whatever, then, you know, that's not so scary, but like
a big part of the game is grappling and trips and stuff.
Yeah.
And also keep that in mind, that's with the bow hurt, the melee styles, with the duelist stuff, it's not in that unless you're doing the IMCF rules. That one, IMCF, there's not really grappling, but you can punch and kick, which I actually like, because historically it's cool to be able to punch somebody and kick somebody and then set them up for a shot. Now the kicks and the punches don't count as the points. Only the sword hit count as points, but it's nice to set somebody up. Yeah. And HME rules, there's no punching, there's no grappling. So for especially HEMA-like people, I say the duelist and some other ones are right down their alley. And then when you get a crazy hair and you're like, man, I want to try out the melees once and be safety, you can. Or you can just never do it, and it's still perfectly fine.
Interesting.
Something for everybody.
Something for everyone, yeah. So, talking about all the armor and how far apart everybody is and all these events you go to, how committed do you need to be to do this sport?
I think it depends on your goals. Yeah, he's stretching it out. Yeah, like there are some people that do this for fun, and then there are some people that do this competitively, and then there are people that switch back and forth between that. And so I think, you know, you get out of the sport what you're willing to put in, just to be honest.
Because I know, like, in HEMA, it can be, I just want to train once a week or even once a month and fight people because it's fun. And then, and you got, like, in sports fencing, sometimes it can be medals, we've got to get those medals kind of thing. Like, is it just a recreational thing that happens to have competition in it, or is it all about let's get to the fights, let's get the gold?
It's whatever. Like, it's a personal goal, yeah.
Yeah, it can really depend. Like, for me, I want to be the best in the world, or at least try once. Yeah. And when we did, I mean, the world blew up a lot of stuff, so I'm not really sure if H&B will ever have another Battle of the Nations, but IMCF will have another qualifiers in 2004. Or, sorry, 2024. They'll, I know, I went back, way back in the time machine, but 2024. Because it got canceled this year. They didn't even have the tournament, but then they're not having it this next year because of the war and everything, too. But they're planning 2024. We'll have a qualifiers in the United States to see who becomes the United States representative for Bohurt teams, for duelist, sword and shield, sword and buckler, long sword, and polearm, men's and women. And then you get to go overseas, and that's like the Olympics then. And normally there's two, the Battle of the Nations and IMCF, but we're not sure. And I won for this year for longsword to go over, but then of course the war happened, which it's our game and people's lives are at stake. So it's like, you can't be like, oh, I don't get to go do something. But to me, I want to see if I'm the best in the world or fight the best in the world and see how it happens. Or you can just, like I said, you can just fight in your backyard. You can fight with friends and just go to events or Renaissance fairs now. A lot in the United States. Renaissance fairs are doing a lot of steel combat or armor combat.
That's what I'm going to be working this whole winter here.
Yeah, and I wanted to
thank
that.
I'm going to be fighting and doing that in, at TRF in Texas.
And there's plenty of that.
Yeah.
And like a lot of people actually wanted to kick out their jousters. I'm not saying where, but the jousters are getting complacent for some of their, they just do their stuff and they don't put on a good show. And some people, there's some opportunities. People have talked to me. They're like, hey, would you come over and do some fighting with us? And we will get paid a little bit. I mean, I don't know how much. You want just to have your stuff covered, but it's a start, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that was going to be another question of mine is like, obviously you're doing this because it's a sport, but do Ren fairs and stuff say, come and do a demo as a entertainment, as a sort of, you know, cabaret act type thing? Does that happen much?
Yeah, and what we just do at that point is we say, hey, we're still winning, we're still trying to compete, but we're not gonna, you know, we're not gonna gap each other. Gapping means hitting somebody where their armor isn't, which is a strategy, but it's not one you really use unless there's very it's a point of contention in the sport. It's a point of contention in the sport as to whether when you're supposed to and not supposed to, but whenever you're doing exhibitions and shows, definitely 100%, you are not supposed to. You're hitting each other on your armor. You're still competing. You're still giving each other good reps, but you're not, you know, you're supposed to come out with no injuries from an exhibition.
Not going for the gaps. We've got two questions in the box. Kenjutsu Sparring says, I see a lot of hitting, I think he says. How do you know who the winner is? Is it on points and do knockouts count? So how does the scoring work in armored combat? This is something that we don't know about.
So that's the one where it depends. Like, so we have, if it's the H&B dual set, they fight for a minute and 30 seconds, and it's counted blows. Heads count as two, hands one, everything else is one. Or I think bodies two, but honestly, in a duel, you really rarely get a chance to hit somebody in the body unless you're doing slot shots. And then that's the, for buckler, it's first to five hits, and sword and shield is also 130, pole arm still 130, and if you're doing IMCF, that one's the one that has punching and kicking, but it's still counted blows, but they're best two out of three 1 minute rounds. And then for pro fight, it really depends who what they're fighting. Some people do 3 2-minute rounds, people at the upper echelon are trying to start getting into 3 3-minute rounds, like real like UFC, where champion fights go to 3 5-minute rounds. But I think honestly, we're trying to make this a spectacle still, and people get that cardio up there. It's hard, but I think more 1 minute 30-second rounds to 2-minute rounds is the sweet spot with 1 minute and 30-second rests. But those ones can be the KO if it happens, or it's just points. And when someone goes to the ground, because it's like grappling in the pro fights, So you get them on the ground, then you have 10 seconds to hit them while they're on the ground. After that, the ref's like, get them up, and then you start over again.
Technically in a pro fight, too, like, oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were...
Go, Charles, go.
Oh, I was going to say, as a technical, like, in the rules, too, in, like, a pro fight, if it takes someone longer than 10 seconds to get up, technically, that's a knockout, but it hasn't really been enforced because we're still really new to it. So there are definitely parameters for TKOs and knockouts. I've seen, I think, like, two actual knockouts for pro fights.
You're saying them, right? With all arm ones?
What's that?
I said, was it polearm ones with the knockouts? Or what was
I think one was sword and shield. Yeah, and one was polearm because it was Charlie. Yeah. He was sleep. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's Fran, two.
Sorry, go on.
Oh, go ahead. No, I was just saying the last thing for rules in Bohurt is 3 points of contact to the ground. Like that one, once you go on the ground, you're out. They make you stay down or if you just go down. So, yeah.
Okay. So we got some points systems working differently depending on what you're doing, depending on the rule set. So, Fran, how important is parrying when you're fighting? Or is it more a case of just got to hit the other person as many times as I can? I don't care if they hit me. I've just got to get them as many times as I can.
Right. Okay. So I would say it depends on what you're doing. So if you're doing the dueling fight, then you need to make sure that like no one is like getting points on you because that's how you lose. If you're doing the melee mass fighting, where it doesn't matter, I would say just like people can hit you, but it's about getting them down on the ground.
Yeah.
And so for me, I'm kind of like I'm pretty tanky. So it's pretty difficult for people to, like, this isn't supposed to sound braggadocious, but it's pretty difficult for people to kind of like hit me into submission. So for me, what used to get me in trouble for fencing because not blocking shots, it's like less of a problem here because I will allow someone to get in so I can like get in them and take them down that way. So parrying is important depending on what you're doing. In my favorite style of sighting, it doesn't matter as much.
Cool. That's interesting. I think there was another question just after. Oh no, that's already been done. So what is the time now? Right. Oh my gosh, we've gone way over time.
Sorry, hold the bar. Hold the bar. Yeah.
There's so much stuff I want to know. Right. Just quickly then, what is your, I'm going to start with you, Fran, what is the message to the sword, your message, whether you personally or the group, to the sword community?
I would say anyone could do this regardless of what they look like. You get out of the sport what you put in, so just give it a try. Don't let money be something that like stops you because this is a very like welcoming community. People will lend you your armor. People will put in time as long as you're willing to show up.
Excellent. And Spencer.
I just say it's there is a welcoming community everywhere. You can do it at all certain levels that you want to. If you just want to come in and learn how to swing a sword, we can definitely teach you how to do that. It doesn't matter where you are, reach out to any one of us. And if we don't know the answer, we'll send it to somebody else to get you the answer. And it's just fun to have a good time with swords with your friends. Yeah. And in our trades, definitely for the POC community as well, plus.
Excellent. And Charles?
My message personally is that Blackness is not only always been a part of this sport, it's always been a part of history, it's always been a part of armor, it's always been a part of, you know, sword fighting and axe fighting or whatever. So there's no need to feel out of place. Come, have a good time. We'll enjoy it.
We've always been here.
We've always been here.
That just leaves me to say, Knights of Wakanda, Wakanda forever. Thank you so much.
Wakanda forever, baby. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been lovely talking to you.
Thank you for having us. Really appreciate it.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. To show your appreciation, please give us a 5-star review on your podcast platform or support our work by becoming a patron at patreon.com/swordwomen. Go to @swordwomen on Instagram to see upcoming interviews or visit buythesword.net to learn about our events or visit our Facebook page, By the Sword.